What's going on, podcast family? What's up, sales culture? This one's going on there first. I got the LinkedIn lives going. I have the Facebook live up and running. The Instagram live is going. So tune into sales culture on any of those platforms and check in. Let me know that you're listening. But with that, I'm recording this intro live from the DigiMarCon conference here in Santa Monica. So I'm the podcasting host, running the podcasting studio. And so I'll be interviewing a lot of the people, a lot of the speakers, I should say, after they're done talking, you know, having that post-game follow-up, basically. That's kind of my role here at the conference today, and I'm excited about doing it because I get to learn and listen in on some of the latest and greatest things that are transpiring all throughout digital marketing, a space that I'm definitely interested in. But today I'm going to lay out and we're gonna have a great conversation with my guy Jamal Rashad. This guy is one of the elite trainers, sports trainers in LA. He works with a handful of pro football players I know about personally, and he also runs camps for people trying to get into the league. So I really like Jamal's approach because he started this whole movement around athletes first, and really where he's pretty much advocating for athletes' rights, right? And so we get into it today, man. I talked to Jamal months ago, right before I was going off to the NFL Combine, and so I pulled him aside after I got done with training a group of athletes, and we just chopped it up on the podcast. We talk everything about the sports business. We talk a lot about the whole dangers of having conversation without having context, which I think really applies because we're going to We're going to talk about some areas that are very sensitive for a lot of people, economic issues that we see happening all throughout the country, and just a lot of the old school thinking that still exists. So I want to warn you guys up front, we're definitely going to be cussing a little bit. I wanted him to relax and be loose. So I normally am a little bit stiffer, but I'm trying a totally different approach with this podcast. I want it to be open. I want to be more relaxed, and I want to get your thoughts and see if this resonates with you guys or not. So either way, drop past sales culture. Let me know what you think about it. Shoot me an actual direct message, or always link up with me on LinkedIn. And we got to talk about this. How come we haven't linked up on LinkedIn yet? I'm really putting a lot of effort and energy into growing that platform, and it's moving, and I like what LinkedIn's doing. So if we haven't, let's find time to do it. Let's make today the day that we go ahead and do it. Sit back and enjoy this conversation with Jamal Rashad, because I think you guys will just have fun talking about some of these, you know, well, we had fun doing it, but I think you'll have fun listening us talking about Band-Aid culture and the whole capitalistic state, and just a lot of those interesting conversations that people have whenever they're just hanging out post-workout or grabbing some whiskeys together. So that's the type of flow was. Sit back and enjoy this conversation with Jamal Rashad, and be sure to subscribe, and you know, just let me know what you think, because I'm always trying to share different elements and challenge myself to be better than I was in the past, and this is something that's different for me. So I would love to hear from you guys. With that said, let's dive into today's show. I want to start with your background first.
Yeah, go ahead.
So your pops, he's a coach as well.
Yeah.
I mean, so you came up, but you played football though.
Yeah. So my dad,
running back, right?
Yeah. So okay. My dad coached and played pro basketball for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like one of the pioneers, right?
So mad strict coming up or what?
Nah. So, you know, my pops wasn't around, right?
Oh, okay.
So my dad, very, very long story short, my dad was in his pursuit of playing pro basketball, spent like, we used to call it in the sports world, had a cup of tea with a team, right, where you don't spend very much time.
He had
a cup of tea with the Clippers, and then he left and started playing overseas. And, you know, this is back in the day, man. It's like pre-Skype, pre-phone calls. Like, you don't really have a way of communicating with family and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, so it's different back then.
He was playing basketball overseas, and then, you know, that overseas life, some guys can do it, some guys can't. He just thrived in it.
And, which country was he with?
I think originally he went to Portugal.
Okay.
And, you know, my dad changed his last name, converted to Islam.
Oh, wow.
You know,
wow.
I mean, you know a lot about black culture, I'm sure,
of course.
That whole trend that was happening back then, which is why my last name was Rashad.
Yeah.
And then he started spending time coaching and playing in the Middle East. And
which year was this?
God, you got to think. If I was born in 87, you're talking about he left to play overseas, probably talking about 89, 90.
Yeah, yeah, man.
And he spent probably about 25 years over there.
Okay.
And then decided that he wanted to try and come back, got his law degree, and wow. decided that he wanted to come back and do sports administration. But, you know, this world is all about connections and politics. So mm-hmm. being overseas for 25 years, he didn't have those contacts here so that he can have that AD job or that assistant AD job. So he just got a job literally about 6 months ago and took a job in Qatar. He's coaching a team in Qatar right now.
Wow. Yeah. Are you guys tight?
You know, we've gotten closer. It's interesting, man. Like, we're closer now as men
than we were as
father and son.
I hear that a lot, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes more sense, too, right? Because you can kind of digest things a little.
Yeah.
As a kid, things are so complex. You know what I mean? Trying to really get your arms around what's going on.
And I think for me, I think everybody kind of has to find themselves and go through their own, like, journey. You know what I mean? So when football came crashing down for me and I had to figure out what life was about and, you know, I was going to play pro football. That was just it. You know, my grandfather played pro football. My uncle played pro football for like 14 years. My dad played pro basketball. So for me, it was like, that was it, you know? Yeah. So when that didn't happen and I was told I couldn't play football again because of two back-to-back injuries.
What was the injury, by the way?
Shoulder.
Okay, shoulder.
Yeah. It like rocked my world to its core. Like, I mean, you start questioning life and like what your purpose in this world and all that. I hit like rock bottom. So
that's how it goes, though, man. You know, it's funny, man. Like, especially once you identify as an athlete all your life and you got all your male role models that sound like that were ballers, players, and everything else. And then to kind of say, all right, now I'm not going to do this that you've been doing for, let's call it 10 years probably at least. You know what I mean?
I mean, at that point, you're talking about, I started playing football when I was 9.
Yeah.
So at this point, football's done at 20. I was told I was done at 19, and I still played another 2-3 years after that. Damn. But you're talking about your whole existence.
Well, you know what, man? I didn't even welcome you on properly. We were just flowing, so I had to keep it going. Sorry. Hey, man, Jamal Rashad, I want to welcome you on to the podcast, man. And it's cool, man, because every time I come to Dr. Pat's place and over here in Encino, it's like I bring past guests, tour them around. You always come up, introduce yourself, speak well.
I try.
Give a nice firm handshake, dope eye contact, you know what I mean? Like, you always carry yourself with this presence of, like, you know what I mean? Dopeness, man. So,
I appreciate that.
Once I started going to your Instagram page, well, matter of fact, after I found out that we already had, like, mutual contacts through Nico. Nico was my old barber. You guys obviously...
Oh, yeah.
You guys obviously played ball together back in the day. And I started seeing what you were doing online. I was like, oh, I got to have you on the podcast. So we can just chop it up for a quick moment, man.
I appreciate it, man.
No, man. Thank you for joining the show, man.
Of course. I mean, I love stuff like this. So.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I think that there's so many good movements that are going on. Not so many. Every once in a while, I see a good movement. Mm-hmm. That's just an authentic movement.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'm crazy about podcasts, and I always try to pitch everybody on like podcasts, so I'm going to pitch you on it as well, bro.
I appreciate it.
but it's like, man, you know, we have an opportunity to really get our actual word out without anybody else jumping in between it and then trying to unplug us. You know what I mean?
For sure.
I mean, and what you're doing with Athletes First, I think is pretty strong, though, man.
Yeah, I think it's a gift and a curse, right? Because like the more access you have to information, that means the more access you have to information on both sides, right?
Right.
So the sides
more
that,
confusion.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. So it's almost like you're trying to decipher between good and bad information. And I think for a lot of people, it's such a, with all the day-to-day that we already have in our own lives, it's not a coincidence. People just stop deciphering. They just say, screw it. And they just step away from all of it and just go, I don't even know. And that's a big thing that it's a big hurdle that we run into, especially when you're talking about, like, you know, players' rights and things are happening in college sports. There's just so much going on that people don't have the time to try and decipher from one or the other. So I think people tend to go to people that they trust.
Yeah.
And people they trust their word and what they've done. And so I think for me, how I interact with people, I really do see it as a very pivotal piece in this journey, because if I plan to really spend my life doing this, my character and what people think about me and what people have to say about me and my integrity and my moral character, it matters. It matters a lot.
Well, you know what's interesting about this day and time is that everything's on wax, man. Everything's recorded. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything. Yeah. So it's like if you were doing something that was very short-term thinking publicly, now everything's public, right?
Yeah.
People are going to come back and look at you like, man, look at what you thought was right.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
That's definitely going to mess up your whole, like, long-term legacy and everything, man. So, all right, I want to dive into it a little bit because I'm sure you got some opinions on this. You know, I was talking to a sports agent, a basketball coach. I had him on the podcast last week. And I asked him, I was like, do you guys think that players should get paid? Mm-hmm. College athletes ought to get paid. Mm-hmm. What's your whole take on it, man?
So, I think... So I'm fascinated and I'm obsessed with this concept of defining words. Mm-hmm. Okay, because I think so often we use words like compensation, pay, mm-hmm. good, bad, and there's these general terms that people really don't dive deeper and really define them before they use them. Mm-hmm. So that being said, do I think they should get paid? Yes. Do I think that they should just be getting a check in the mail or be paid like professional athletes? No. Mm-hmm. I think that gets really dangerous, right? The other thing I think a lot of people don't take into consideration is that I'm all for players' rights, right? My goal is to be an advocate for that and for me to push the needle on that, okay? Mm-hmm. But I'm standing here today saying that a lot of people say, yes, we should do something, but they don't really take into consideration all the secondary and third effects that happen as a result. So you can't just say, yes, you should, without really thinking about what that means for an industry as a whole, what that means for a culture, what that means for a group of people. And that's why these things are so complex. Mm-hmm. That surface level, they go, yeah, yeah, they should get paid. Well, okay, how do they get paid? How much do they get paid? When do they get paid? How long do they get paid? There's right. so much to it that it's not the easiest thing. The short answer is yes, I think they should get paid.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, man, you know, what's cool about that is that you put it in context first because I think people say, oh, I want to get a paycheck, and then people automatically go negative, right? Because you're like, you're out here being greedy. You just want to get checked. You know, you don't want to work for it. You just want to hand it to you.
Of course.
How come your college education isn't enough mm-hmm. as like payment whenever everybody else is paying for it?
Yep.
But there is some context behind that people got to bring into it, man.
For sure.
Both the sports agent and the coach said that the players shouldn't get paid. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. You know, I mean, and they had a different take, you know?
Well, see, sometimes, like, they'll say they shouldn't get paid, right? But, yeah. like, for example, if they might say that they should increase the stipend.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Increasing the stipend is getting paid.
Yeah.
I don't care how you want to call it. If you want to call it a stipend, you want to call it getting right. paid, you want to call it a paycheck, they need to receive more money.
Yeah.
So however you want to label it, you can. But that's what makes these things hard, because if you don't define these terms and are very specific about what the conversation and what people are talking about, if it lacks context, yeah. you just go around in circles and nothing really gets done. I think there's a few different ways to go about doing it.
Okay.
I understand the intricacies about it, and I understand the hurdles behind Title IX, right, mm-hmm. and female and male players' rights, right?
Yeah, everybody, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, I understand all that, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes it very difficult. However, I don't think that anybody can argue that looking at college athletes, what they are expected to do and what they do on a regular basis, especially the contact sports, I'm going to be biased towards it, like football.
Okay? Of course.
What these players are asked to do and what they are doing and putting their lives on the line, because obviously, you know, this is very serious stuff, right? Yeah. And people are benefiting from it, okay? If everybody wants to say that they're college athletes, then let's take all that money the NCAA is making, yeah. let's take all that money that coaches are making, and let's take some of that and let's put that somewhere else. But they don't want to do that,
right?
So they kind of don't want to play it both ways, right? It's a business, but it's college athletics. No, it's a college athletics for the athletes. Mm-hmm. For everybody else, it's a business. Everybody's doing real well.
Man, you know what? That's a great point. I think a lot of the general population doesn't fully understand what the athletes go through.
Mm-hmm.
So they say that. Now, I didn't play college ball. I mean, I had a couple little D2 scholarships mm-hmm. because, yeah. but I was more into like partying, right? Yeah. That's why I spent so much damn time in college. But still though, I mean, do you mind just kind of walking through like a quick day to day of what an athlete goes through?
Yeah. Well, you know, every school is different.
Of course.
So, you know, but my experience through athletes, I've learned a lot. Like, we started athletes first because I thought that what I went through at Fresno was just my experience. And then I started having friends that were at SC, at UCLA, at Florida, and I realized that everybody was having similar experiences, right? So a typical day, let's just say during the season, okay? Mm-hmm. You got class. You got some of these kids that aren't going to class. That's a whole other thing that certain schools are doing, but whatever, teach their own, okay?
Yeah.
You're waking up, you're going to class. If you got, for example, for me, we had 6 a.m. lifts, okay? So to make it to a 6 a.m. lift, you're up at 5:30, okay? You're going to a 6 a.m. lift, and this is a lift. You're in there for about an hour and a half, mm-hmm. getting after it, okay? Mm-hmm. After that, you're going to breakfast. After that, you're probably going to class for about 4 or 5 hours. After that, you're coming back to the gym, and doing meetings at 1:30. This is what our schedule was at Fresno. Yeah. You're in meetings at 1:30. You're in meetings from about 1:30 to about 3 o'clock. Then you're on the field for practice. You're off the field at, yeah, you're off the field by 5:36. Okay, maybe 7. That doesn't include if you're injured and you got extra PT, which I was doing. Okay, mm-hmm. Then after that, you gotta somehow go home and do some kind of homework. Like, I was fortunate enough to where I cut corners. I was able to get away with not really doing that much schoolwork outside of actually being in class. Yeah. I could be in class and focus, and I could, for the most part, I did fine. But you're talking about you're talking about at least a 12-hour day.
That's what I think a lot of people don't fully understand. Like, that most of the athletes that I was around, those guys were gone throughout the week.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There was a small little time that they poked their head out on, like, mm-hmm. a Saturday or something, yep. after the game, right? Yep. You know, like, yep. that's when they hung out. But it wasn't like they were doing nearly as much activities. The free time wasn't even close to the amount for of sure. free time that me and like, most of my friends had. So it was like they were studying, and they had their actual hours to study and all that, but they had off hours mm-hmm. for, like, studying after their, you know, as you said, 12-hour mm-hmm. day. And I think people don't fully get that they're clocking in like that.
Oh, yeah, you for know? Sure. And the thing is, you know, everybody has their opinions on it. Like, you know, whether that's a hard day or it's not that hard of a day, or a day like that is justified because you're getting a college education, everybody can justify it. Like,
sure.
And I see both points. At the end of the day, even though college athletes, you can argue that they have it really good, or there's certain benefits that they receive because of their athletic ability, it's still the industry itself just doesn't, it's not equal in terms of everybody that participates in that industry. Players, coaches, referees, administration, everybody can kind of move freely,
right.
do what they want for the most part, go from team to team, take opportunities, make money, except the players. So that's the part that is frustrating for me. I'll tell you a personal story, which I can now talk about all this stuff because he's not the coach there anymore. But okay. when I went to Fresno, okay, I got hurt before I went to Fresno, so I ended up losing all my offers. Okay,
wow.
And originally I had verbally committed to Auburn, which at this time you'll remember this was when they tied for the national championship and they lost Ronnie Brown and Cadillac Williams.
Oh wow, yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that following was a big year, yeah, this was 2005.
Wow.
So that following year they lost both of them in the draft. They wanted
they were crazy out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to junior college for a year, right?
Okay.
So they wanted me to come in and be able to play right away. Okay. After I had, after I injured my shoulder in that junior college season, them and every other school was gone, like a light switch. Okay. So I had to figure out what I was going to do. It's a very humbling moment because the letter that I received from Fresno was like a handwritten letter, which back in the day, if you got a handwritten letter, it was like a team was really interested.
It meant
right?
something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember getting this handwritten letter, not even opening it. That's how arrogant I was, right? And I felt like I was arrogant, justifiably so, because I was told that I could never make it. And here I am now, like, now what? You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay? Yeah, 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 yeah.
So it was a very humbling moment because after I got hurt, the only school that was there was Fresno.
Wow.
Okay? I go through my ups and downs, and that's a whole other story about my experience at Fresno. But my last year that I was there, summertime, and they had budget cuts. Okay? So a lot of Cal States were going through this thing where they just weren't offering classes. Okay? In order to be there in the summertime, you have to take full-time, you have to be a full-time student in the summertime in order to receive a scholarship check. That's what they usually do with football in order for you to stay there. Okay?
Wow.
So you can work out in the summertime. Okay. Well, if they don't have any classes for you to take,
what do you do?
Right. So what they did was they gave us jobs. Okay. They gave us jobs. Now this wasn't like back like in early 2000s where you were folding towels at a health club making $25 an hour. This was like real work. Okay.
What were you guys out there doing?
I'll tell you, there was 10 of us.
Yeah.
There was 10 of us. I'll never forget. I remember this like to this day. There was 10 of us and there were 3 different divisions. There was actually 4. One was you had the paint crew. Okay. You had the groundskeeping crew. You had the electrical crew. And then 1 out of the 10 people was going to go with the locksmith for the whole summer. And everybody was like, I don't want to be the locksmith because we don't want to be alone. We all want to be together.
Yeah.
So one person, Wilson Ramos, decided to be the locksmith. And we were like, man, that's a stupid idea. Okay.
Yeah.
So they split the other 3 of us up in 3 different groups. And we basically shuffle every 2 weeks. You go to each division, grounds, paint, and electrical. Okay. Sure. Electrical, you basically went around the whole campus and you were just switching out light bulbs. Okay. I can speak freely on this thing. Like,
come
how
on, please.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Open yourself up.
All right, cool. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So you went around the whole school and you basically switched out fucking light bulbs the whole time.
Okay? For the whole summer?
No, for the 2 week period.
All right, for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
period.
But you're talking about like a 6-7 hour day.
And like the dead of like, you know,
Fresno.
of Fresno in the valley, you know what I mean? Man. There ain't no real good breeze going through. I'm sure it's not.
Yeah. And electrical was the good job, okay?
Oh, man.
Second one was the grounds crew, okay? Yeah. For the grounds crew, you again, it was 2 week period. Yeah. You basically went around campus and you basically dug up fucking weeds. And you did groundskeeping. Like you were in, I had a full suit on, a whole white suit. Like, I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious.
I didn't know they were doing that to athletes out there during this time, man.
Wait to the third one. I did this purposely.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
So the grounds crew, you're going around. The best part of it, you're driving that fucking gator. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, so you drive around the gator doing grounds crew work. It sucked. Okay?
Paying dues. Yeah, yeah.
Yo, the third was the paint crew. Okay, for the paint crew, you went into Bulldog Stadium, and you would shave off sand and repaint in blue paint all of the rails in the stadium. That stadium is 115 in the middle of the summer. I promise you, I can't make this up. I can't make this up. Those are the three jobs that we had,
and they're not getting the check.
Okay, you have to put in those hours in order to get paid a paycheck, so you can pay your rent and all your other stuff.
Of course,
get a scholarship check. Okay, so here's the irony of all of this. Okay, in this summer, wow, I'm doing this fucked up work. Okay,
yeah, yeah.
Because my school doesn't have the ability to give us classes. Okay,
yeah.
So I'm like, okay, cool. Last week we're there. They decided to have like a luncheon kind of thing for the athletes on the team that did it, some of the staff that was there. We all do like this barbecue thing. I'm sitting outside and I'm sitting at a table with Coach Hill. Coach Hill is talking about how far the program has come and how different it was in the early 2000s when he took over and what it was then. And right? Okay. And I'm like listening, like, okay, I have my own opinions about him or whatever, but we're sitting there and this man looks at me at a group of us and he tells us a story about how there was a point in time where they were bringing dumpsters and tractors and they were putting them in the parking lot of the stadium because they were telling recruits and their parents they were adding on to the stadium knowing that they didn't have the money to do it.
Wow.
Right? And I looked at him and I was like, I was in such disbelief that he had the balls to tell me this story that I'm like,
yeah,
oh, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm like,
but you hear about this all the time, though.
I remember those stories.
Yeah.
I remember getting there. I remember, and I'm like, you just blatantly just lying to people. You're just lying. And then when we find out that you're lying, I'm now bound by NCAA rules, and I can't go to my second choice because if not, I lose a year. I can't. If I wanted to go to Boise, I'd lose two because it's in the same conference.
Right.
So you're telling me you can just blatantly tell me lies. I can sign a contract based off lies, and then I can't. That contract is still valid. It's still. I can't remove it. I can't eliminate it. No. Like, what other industry does this exist?
It's fucked up, man. I mean, because you know that's the piece about it. And you know, I remember movies like He Got Game and all that. But you know, where they used to bring you out, give you a nice experience and whatever. And of course, you know, of course, that was like a movie, so I was all extreme and everything else.
It's very true.
That's very true. I believe a lot of it.
Oh, man, yeah.
I believe a lot of it, though. But it's that bad selling that people are up to, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they present this picture that's not even close to the reality.
Absolutely.
For a lot of these people.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So they bring them out. They got all this stuff
recruiting
happening.
Visits.
Yeah, yeah, the recruiting visits.
Uh-huh.
What was the other one in, like, football? It was
the
called
program?
The program. The program. Yeah, yeah. You remember the program. Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, so, you know, those are the things that I think people don't fully comprehend that are happening
for sure
that are not involved with athletics.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I had tons of friends that played, so therefore I understand. I saw a piece of it. I didn't fully experience it. I saw it.
Yep.
They were like, "Yo, that's not how it is." You know? Yep. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And they used to be crapping about it, but it's different whenever you kind of get in there yourself.
Yeah.
And the fact that they had you guys working.
Oh yeah.
Man, that's a. I didn't even know about that piece of it.
Well,
it's the conversation.
So, yeah, man, and it's so multifaceted, right? Because there's so many different ways you can look at it. I mean, you can, especially when you're talking about the money-making sports, let's just call it what it is. You're talking about men's football, men's basketball.
Yeah,
that's just what it is.
Yeah,
okay?
But those are two moneymakers.
When you're talking about the money-making sports, there's a certain demographic of young men that are playing that sport that look like you and me.
Yep.
Okay, so let's just call it what it is. You know what I mean? Like, that's a tricky one. You know what I mean?
That's tricky.
You know what I mean?
That's a
tricky one. Yeah. There's a lot of different ways that you can look at it, whether it be from a cultural or from a socioeconomic standpoint.
You
can look at it from just a pure athlete or student athlete standpoint. There's a lot of different ways you can look at it. Either way,
I got
there's just a lot of injustice that's happening. It's brutal.
It is, man. You know, I got some friends that really even take it a couple steps further. And not saying I'm fully with them on this, but, you know, what's your thoughts on the whole combine trainings that they have? Like, a lot of people lay them up to be like slave trade type
That's exactly what it feels like.
Right?
I've done one.
I mean,
that's what I did for my NFL pro day.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, again, let's call it what it is. Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, there is, and this is a very, obviously, very sensitive topic,
Of course, of course.
But at the end of the day, there is some similarities.
Sure.
Right? And that is that you are paying for an individual person to provide a service.
Yeah. Right?
In 2019, it's football and it's a sport, right?
Yeah.
Hundreds of years ago, it was for a different kind of service.
Yep.
Nonetheless,
it's a service.
It's still a service and it looks very similar. What happens is you're in a line full of dudes. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
And you're in
I'll be there tomorrow, actually. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And they're yelling out a name, your height, your weight, and you know what I mean?
And so, you get after it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? The symbolism is very.
It's there.
It's a little it's a little cringeworthy.
Yeah.
But, you know.
There's some truth in that, though, man.
There is some truth to that.
And, you know, I think a lot of times, like you said, people don't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. You don't want to look at it for how it looks. Yep. I mean, but there's some things that people can't get away from. Mm-hmm. And this is what I think that we're messing up a lot in the U.S. is that we don't deal with the real things that are bothering us.
Never do.
You know what I mean? I was down in
Band-Aid culture.
Band-Aid culture, yeah. Bro. That's a good, perfect way to put it, man. I was down in Colombia last month. Well, mm-hmm. in like January. And literally, they had racing down there as well, of course, right? Everything's mm-hmm. going on.
Yeah.
But how they dealt with a lot of their things was in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Like during Pablo's reign,
mm-hmm.
they kept those bomb statues where he blew up, where he's blowing up people,
mm-hmm.
and they listed out the names that guy killed on a monument. Like, look, we don't want to be this people anymore.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like it's in their face. If they're walking through a straight courtyard, it's there. Yep. They have to deal with that. Yep. Like, yeah, I got to watch out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I got to make sure that we don't start naturally backsliding, because you can't. Tell me that naturally, if you grew up a certain type of way, there isn't certain things that are in you that won't come out as an adult. It's just natural.
100%.
It's there, right?
That's what people don't want to say, right?
Yeah.
And you know, to a certain extent, Band-Aid culture to me is just a byproduct of the kind of society we live in, right? We live in a capitalist society, which means that we are a money-driven society. Mm-hmm. So if that's how our society functions, we are going to pursue things in our own self-interest
mm-hmm.
that bring us some kind of fortune, right?
Yeah.
That's what slavery was. Like,
people try to make money. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, and again, this is like really heavy shit, but like, if you have a business mm-hmm. that functions, that provides you money and resources and power, okay? Mm-hmm. If you have a business and the success of that business is contingent upon a group of people that don't look like you to do work for free, okay? Once slavery is emancipated, and slavery is no longer legal, mm-hmm. that's a problem for you.
Oh.
Like,
it's
you know
a major
what I mean?
Problem.
That's a problem for you. So what, and you've probably seen 13th?
Of course.
So then you see how all that transpires, right?
Yeah.
Into the criminalization of black people, into paying them to be a certain way because a prison force can be used as a free labor force, right? So, and I think that's the conversation that people don't want to, that a lot of people either don't want to have it or people are not educated enough to have it. So instead, they just talk about what should and shouldn't be instead of what is and what is not.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes things a lot more difficult.
Man, there's this really good audio book. It's freaking like 34 hours long. And man, it's the people's history of the American. I mean, of America, I should say. Oh. But it's pretty much letters from everybody that was like silent, people that could read and write. And so it's from slaves, it's from other people, from people that were disadvantaged.
Wow.
I mean, and it talks about and it lays out a long history of how these laws were kind of laid in mm-hmm. over hundreds and hundreds of years. One of the things that I thought was really interesting was how black and white people worked together in the fields until they slowly started separating, where they said, oh, you guys got to work on separate, you guys got to be on separate parts of the field. Now, they were all poor. Now, mm-hmm. of course, they were slaves, but the white people were also poor. And then they slowly started separating them. Then they started forming these little militias going around. Say, oh, join the militia. Everybody needs to have a gun. Like, no, I don't think we ever talk about this in the U.S., but no other country is really as gun happy as us.
Absolutely.
People are in wars. You know what I'm saying? People are in wars and not as gun happy as us.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I got a couple guns too. But mm-hmm. it's one of those things, mm-hmm. you know, it's like people, man, we lust over the guns. You know cultural. What I mean? It's cultural, man. And you know, a lot of that drives from those groups of people going around keeping people in check.
Yep.
Now, I think guns are good to keep governments in check as well, because governments can get out of hand too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so I'm not really trying to say, you know, guns are bad or anything's bad, but it's good to know what your history is. It's good to know where how things were formed over time.
I agree.
Because along the way, you're like, well, these things start popping up. You aren't really sure why you believe what you believe.
I agree. I think we're like, we're just in it. We have an extreme culture, right?
Yeah.
Everything we do in excess, right? Mm-hmm. And I think with certain things, like, I don't know, with certain things, it can be good, with other things, it can be bad, right? Yeah. But we don't have the ability to allow our youth to start drinking at 18 years old. It just can't happen. It'd be anarchy in the street.
Yeah.
But when you go to Europe or you go to Canada, it's not happening. A problem, right?
It's all day.
Everything we do, and that's that same Band-Aid culture, because all we're doing is using alcohol, drugs, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. To mask these kinds of bigger problems that we have kind of laying underneath the surface. And then it's just these huge, everything just becomes so exacerbated. You know what I mean? Like, but how do you change that? I don't know.
Hey, man. Well, you know what? I would definitely say it starts with a conversation.
I think so too.
You know what I mean? At some point, somebody says, "Hey, these are my thoughts."
Yeah.
Not saying my thoughts are only the right way to go about it. Not saying I have all the data, all the facts, but this is what I'm seeing, and then bring it to the table. You know.
You know, I had this epiphany. I had to go to Augusta.
Okay.
To go train, to go work with a player, right?
And, Georgia.
Yeah,
Augusta, okay, Georgia. Okay, yeah.
And you know, my dad's side of family is from Florida.
Okay. Right? I didn't know this. All right.
Yeah. So like. And it's like, it's not, don't get me wrong, it's not like Mississippi, but like
Mulberry.
Yeah,
cool out there.
It's like, it's not far off.
I've been through there, man, a couple times.
Okay.
So, I used to live in Atlanta for years.
Okay. So, so you know what I'm talking about.
I know about this.
Yeah. So, what was interesting was that going to see my family, I was always around my family.
Yeah.
Right? And I was always like the weird kid from California, like, which is cool. Like, you know, I don't
West Coast
care.
Kid. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, we're just different compared to like the people in the South.
Yeah.
But I was always around my family. So, this most recent time was the first time I spent time in the South, in like the South. Not being around all black people, right? And so, obviously, I grew up here in LA. I'm from, like, I'm LA through and through my whole life, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Augusta, Georgia, and I walk into a Planet Fitness, okay? I walk into a Planet Fitness to train this athlete slash client friend that I was with, and a friend of his, a mutual friend of ours, it's the three of us were there together. Yeah. And we walk into this Planet Fitness, and this a white lady and
they
her
start
friend,
ringing the alarm off top.
Well, we walk into this one area of the gym, and as soon as we get in, they get up and they walk out.
Wow.
And I'm like, no, there's no way. I was like, no, I can't. And then I started just for the first time just kind of starting to pay attention to like my environment, and I was like, this is rough. Like, it sounds crazy, but I felt like being black from LA, we can kind of for the most part live how we want to live, do like this. It felt like a sense of freedom.
Yeah.
I felt like I was free, and I went back to an area where the people are not free.
Yeah,
that's what it felt like, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now here's the epiphany that I had, though, which is really scary. And I thought about this when you talked about having a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's so dangerous about it is that when I walked out of there, I was like, man, fuck this. Like, I don't like being here. I don't like the environment.
Yeah.
I don't like the power structure of who's in power in the city. Mm-hmm. I don't like how far back this money goes back. You know what I mean? And I don't like, you can feel the racial tension in the city, and you can see the people who are, you can see the class divisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is that if I try to avoid that environment at all costs, how does it ever get better?
Right.
Right? That's what's hard. But see, for my own sanity and for my own peace of mind, I'd rather just be here chilling with my palm trees.
Right.
And my nice weather.
Diversity.
And around.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Having conversations like this.
Mm-hmm.
But we're the ones, we're kind of like in this LA bubble where like people look at us and they're like, they're fucking weird. You know what I mean?
Bro, unfortunately, I feel like the world's becoming more polarized like that too.
Because
there's more people moving to big cities. And there's less people living in these rural areas.
Yep.
So there's less of that diversity. There isn't that many crossing. People from the rural don't really come to the city. People from the city don't really come to the rural, right?
Yep.
And you know, it's funny. I get a chance to travel around a lot just for work. And I go to these, I drive a lot. I fly into weird places. You know, it is like, I'm like, yeah, it's definitely different. But it's like we have these bubbles, even in Atlanta. Atlanta's a bubble compared to Georgia.
100%.
I tell people, I'm like, yo, you know, people always say, oh, Atlanta's this. And I'm like, yeah, but it's in Georgia, so you got to know that.
For sure.
It's different, right?
For sure.
It's just that one little metro area that's really different than the rest of the South.
Yep.
I mean, and then even being out of the North. North has its own little things as well, because I was born and raised in Pittsburgh. And then the West is totally different than than the rest of the coast.
Yep.
Or the rest of the states, I should say. I mean, so, you know, but these bubbles, man, I think that they are good because they put you around like-minded people, but they also kind of throw you off though a little bit, man.
For sure, for sure.
Have you ever seen this movie called, it's called Flying High?
No.
Man, so I think you'll probably like this concept. Do you have like Netflix?
Yeah.
All right, so matter of fact, it's called High Flying Bird. That's the name of the movie.
Okay, High Flying Bird.
So it's about this, it's during this NBA lockout period, and this agent's like going broke, trying to take care of his athletes and everything else. Nobody's gotten paid. And
is it a true story? It's a fictional movie.
Fictional movie, but it's a really interesting concept.
Okay.
And so players just coming up out of coming out of college, don't have any money yet, supposed to get drafted first round, whatever, about to get paid basically, but the NBA is going through a lockout.
Okay.
And so what they did, long story short, is they're trying to figure out how to kind of fight the system, how to try to get the whole lockout over.
Okay.
They start playing each other one on one. In like community gyms, like some of the top athletes, and they put it on Snapchat, they put it on the gram, they put it on YouTube, and they start, and then that agent goes back to the league and says, "Look, we can do this without you, because we're the talent."
Change that power structure. Okay,
power structure.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're at this place in time when the talent are the people that the people are really into.
Yeah.
The end users, right? All the middlemen are getting almost kind of like they're fighting, bro. Like if you talk to music artists, you know, people are going direct to Spotify. They don't really need to go through the labels like that.
Yep.
Independents are doing a really good job of that. Look at Chance, there's a whole bunch of artists doing that. Do you ever see athletes getting to that point?
It depends on what it looks like. In order for that to happen, right, it depends on what that looks like. For example, I think the one-on-one concept, I think is unrealistic because the money that there is to be made doesn't happen, right? At least I don't think so. You have to get buy-in, right? In any situation, it's all about, you know, we live in a capitalist society, so it's all about business. So it's all about your end consumer, right? So it's all about what they're interested in. And if they're interested in seeing 3-on-3 basketball, then you have a market for the big three, right?
Right.
If they're interested in seeing championship basketball, then, you know, then you have what you have now, right? So I think that we stand a better chance of trying to change the power dynamic from within the current system than trying to step back.
And do a whole separate.
Right? Yeah. However, very similar to the Martin and Malcolm dynamic, that the Malcolm approach makes Martin's message better heard. Right. So that extreme shit, even though I don't think that it works, I think that from a political standpoint, it puts pressure to make adjustments in the current system. So and I think usually I've been consumed with this concept of balance. Right. Like consumed with it for probably like the last year.
All right. Talk
and,
about it.
And every and I, you know, I've. Everything, I'm realizing that everything comes down to balance, right? Whether it's physiologically within the body, whether it's, you know, balance between work and play, there's always this balance that we're trying to, I think a lot of us are aiming for, you know? And I feel like the idea of balance is that you're never in complete balance for very long. You're constantly trying to find it. It's never really fully obtainable.
Right.
But I do think that balance is really the virtue to pretty much everything, right? Mm. And that's why I think that balance is the extremism, I think, lends opportunity, opens up doors for that change to happen in the current system.
Internally.
I think so.
That's a really good way to look at using the whole Martin and like Malcolm analogy there, because it puts pressure on the system.
Absolutely.
Right? And then people are challenged to start thinking of solutions.
Yep.
You know, I mean, now maybe, and not saying that I always say every good deal, both parties lose a little bit of skin. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like one person doesn't come away like a straight crook and just beat the person up.
Yep.
And the person that's purchasing doesn't always kind of get exactly what they want as well. But it's a mutual exchange where both parties leave like, all right, okay, I guess that was fair. You know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, and I think, but how do you get to that fair point? if one person's dominating,
of course,
and then everybody else is just kind of stuck on one side, and there's no counterbalance, right?
Of course.
And
of
so, yeah, I thought it was really cool, really interesting concept. I think that you would probably really like it, though.
Yeah, just the idea of it, I think to me sounds awesome. I think what's interesting, like what you're seeing in sports now, mm-hmm. and I think this kind of goes back this. A lot of this goes back to who is participating in the sport when you're looking at, again, football and basketball, two money-making sports. Obviously, baseball's up there too, which is a little bit different. But I think that's why, for me, seeing what's happening within college sports and how that industry is run is so dangerous to me because of the opportunities it's taking from certain individuals, from mm-hmm. certain young players. Also, the lack of preparation that those young athletes now have entering the world. You know what I mean? And I think you see like LeBron's doing some pretty interesting stuff right now in basketball, right?
You know what
I mean? So I think it's possible, but you really have to get people to put their egos aside and kind of get on the same page and try and create change in similar ways. But
that's difficult.
It's very difficult.
It's really difficult trying to get people to kind of drop that ego, man.
Yep.
I mean, because people have their positions and that's that's their whole safety blanket.
Of course.
You know what I mean? And then now it's not safe anymore. When you start dropping that, you start trying to take some chances.
And even if you have money, even if you did a good job of saving your money, right?
No,
when
it's
all said and
that.
Done,
yeah,
it doesn't mean that you know how to run an organization.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think for things to really change, we have to create jobs, we have to create businesses, we have to create things where there's things are really happening. It's not just I've taken my money, I've now opened this business. Opening successful businesses where it allows you to sit at the table and say, yeah, I played basketball, but I can also do this shit too.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And right now you kind of have this, you know, this greater world outside of sports going, yeah, well, you know, you made some money, but it's not quite good. Like we don't have that yet as a group of people. Yeah. Yeah.
Respect, man. So, all right, talk about what you got going on with Athletes First, man. What's your whole mission? What are you trying to see happen?
So it's very interesting. So my goal when we originally started Athletes First was to change the power structure of college sports, right? Mm-hmm. And we decided to do that by giving college athletes a voice to be able to speak about what's happening, good or bad, right? People always assume that we're looking for dirt on schools. Not really. I'm just looking for the truth, right?
Yeah.
Which people say they want a lot, but a lot of times they don't. And we just wanted to create ultimate transparency. And we hoped that by allowing college athletes to share their experiences, it would provide a little bit of context and transparency to the college sports industry, which would in turn allow younger athletes that are coming through and having to make those decisions to make well-informed decisions so they're not basing their decisions off of these recruiting trips only.
Man, right? You know, I mean, to me, that seems like something that if I was a parent, just think about if I had a son coming up, he had a couple, you know, people giving us letters, giving emails, hitting the door, whatever. I mean, I would love to have a service like that.
Right. So I think so too, right? So this has been like about a 6-year-long process. I'm going to tell you what we've experienced doing this, right? Mm-hmm. Is I've heard, and I dedicated my life to this, you know, for the last 7 years, okay, with the exception of like the last probably like 4 or 5 months since things have been crazy here. Mm-hmm. So I've heard almost every kind of response you could possibly think of. Where this catch-22
What's the whole negative response? I mean, I'm just curious, like, who would say, I don't want to know the truth about what's going on, or at least one side of the story?
Nobody says that they don't want to know the truth.
Yeah.
The question, the only negative thing that comes in this place is that we live in a capitalist society, right? Yeah. Which means that every business has to make money. Yeah. So when somebody goes, okay, how does it make money?
Yeah.
Then, this, and you know, I didn't go to school for business for no reason. Like, this is what I racked my brain over trying to figure out the right way to go about doing this. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. You basically have to either A, charge people for something, right? Mm-hmm. Which I didn't want to do. I felt like I couldn't sleep at night knowing that I'm trying to create this change, but only a certain kind of athlete that comes from a certain area is able to even afford the resource. That's adding more to the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or B, if you are not going to charge somebody for it, then you have to have so much volume that what you can do with those numbers and that traffic, you can then do something with. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And so basically it's one of those two things. And if I am going to get additional startup capital or additional seed funding aside from what we put into ourselves, not only do I have to have it conceptually figure out in my own brain, but I now have to try and portray that and explain that to somebody more than likely who's from a tech world that doesn't understand what it's like to be a college black athlete. Got doesn't it. Like so this sports and tech thing is something that's just starting to be merged now, and the people for the most part that are really doing things in tech don't really understand the sports side.
It's true.
And so what we decided to do was I thought, okay, well, if I can go after sheer numbers of college athletes, if I can get college athletes on board in the boatloads to start leaving their responses and start engaging what we're doing, now we really have something. Granted, maybe the amount of traffic is smaller, but that traffic is more powerful because you're talking about some of the most influential people in sports for the next 5 years, right? Yep. So that was my approach. And I got to this point, I was like, okay, well, in order to do that, I can't get college athletes across the whole entire country on board on my own through our own social media. It would take too much work. And we did a little bit of it, and we got some positive reinforcement. We were like, that's too much of an uphill battle. We think there's a better way to go about doing it. So what we decided to do was either try and get into an accelerator program, or try and work with a strategic partner, somebody who's very well tied into sports, more than likely professional sports, that had the money and the influence to be able to, one, help us fund it, and two, use their resource along with mine to get other professional athletes on board, whether it be through marketing materials, X, Y, and Z, right?
Yeah.
And so I'd made that decision to pursue one of those two options back in probably like last year of August. And then things started getting so crazy here at SRLA that it felt like it wasn't the right time.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
No.
And I just know how much time and energy that it takes for that. And I can't do the two at the same time.
Bro, I think that's the wisest thing that I hear people talk about in the business, man.
Yeah.
Timing matters, bro.
I know.
I mean, like, I mean seriously, because I've been a part of three different startups. One worked out pretty well, not so well for me, but for everybody mm-hmm. else, it was okay. Mm, you know okay. what I mean? And the heard other two was straight trash. Uh-huh. And timing was a part of it that wasn't there for me each time. Yep. You know, like, and there's time to take a certain risk, and there's not a time to start doing it yet.
Yep.
Or let the market kind of move with it, you know what I mean? Catch the right wave.
I think what's so interesting, right, is like hindsight is always 20/20.
100%.
Right? So it's like everybody, when it's all said and done, people go, the timing wasn't right, right?
Yeah.
But that being said, when you're in it, right, you go, okay, is the timing right now, or
you
is
never
it not?
Know.
You like,
know.
Right? You never know. You just do what you think is best in the moment, and then you chalk it up, and you go, okay, like, cool or no. Like, right now, I could argue to say, you know what? This is my passion. This is what I want to spend my life doing. I'm going to walk away from all this, and I'm going to just take all this money that I have saved, and I'm just going to dump it all into this.
Yeah.
I could take that risk if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But when I look at the industry, when I look at what we're doing, I go, that's too big of a risk for me, because in the event that I'm not only trying to get the masses in the sports world to understand, but I have to get an investor or somebody else who's probably doing a few other things to also buy in the same way. Is it the right time? I don't know, you know? And so this is where we are.
Well, you know what, man? Jamal, man, I'm about to wrap it up, man. But I think your mission is spot on.
I really do,
because I think people that get involved a lot of times, especially this is called what it is, people that are coming from disadvantaged backgrounds and they don't have the family support there a lot of times when they're making choices and they're left up to a couple other people, they need some other tools.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Because, like, I mean, I feel like I was raised like the Cosby. I was raised I had both my mom and my dad there. You know what I mean? Like, it was a rare setup, but I knew it was rare. Yeah, most of my cousins didn't grow up that way.
I was going to say, yeah, but
a lot of my friends didn't grow up that way. So I knew I was always like, you know, my whole life is a little bit different than a lot of people's life. So I knew I grew up with, like, a lot of privilege with that, black privilege, right?
Yeah.
But with that, it's like making choices, even with them in my corner, was still limited because they weren't
exactly.
They didn't have the same experience that I had coming
up.
And so you need to have that peer to peer. You need as many resources around you.
I agree.
And so, dude, I think you have to sign with it, man. I mean, I would definitely say the mission's right. Timing, you know, I'm sure the time is going to at least find itself once it's right, man.
Yeah, I think so. I think I told somebody recently, I'm not married to the way that I'm going about the change that I want to create, but I'm married to the cause, right? So I'm married to changing the power structure of college sports. Am I married to doing it through an app? Not necessarily. Do I think right now it's still the best way of going about doing that? Yeah. I change my mind in, you know, 6 months, a year from now? Possibly. I don't know. I know that what we're doing here is really special, though. And And this now, what's going on here, to me, is special enough to take, put this, I don't even want to say on the back burner, just let it sit there in a nice case with a light on it and just let it sit there for a second until, you know, we figure out what's going on here a little bit more, and maybe what's going on here allows that to happen faster.
Bro, yeah, you know? I mean, that's the exact same things I'm thinking about. You guys up to something here, bro.
I think so, too.
No, I mean, I bring people, you know, you've seen me come through with people from you know, outside the country as well. Not just around, just around the States, but it's state of the art. You guys got the clientele that people are dying for.
Yeah.
So I think you're in the right place. I think this is good, man.
I appreciate that. I from what did my friends say, from your mouth to God's ears, right?
Yeah,
so
there you go.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope
man. So. Well, bro, tell everybody how to find you, though, man.
I guess the easiest way is just through my Instagram, man. Jamal Rashad. The user, the handle is jrashad34, and the app company is Athletes First. First is spelled with one S T, so it's Athletes with an S, one S T, and yeah, we're still going.
Jamal, much appreciated you taking time, brother.
Of course, man.
All right, man, we're
no
out.
No problem.
Yo, man, you should consider this for. For like any future movements, man, podcasts and stuff that I preach to a lot of people, man. It's chill. I'm not sure if you're into them. Oh, okay,
we've done them a couple of times. I have a friend of mine that runs Farron. What is Farron's last name? I can't remember. They do a podcast out of a old radio station out by LAX. We've done their show a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, dope, bro. I mean, like for what you got, because you got a real mission. Yeah. You know, I mean, you aren't just like, you know, it's cool.
No, I
want to sell some t-shirts. You know what I'm saying? It's different, bro. So.
Struggling to connect with buyers in an overcrowded, noisy sales landscape? Today's buyers want more than a spray and pray email blast. Launch a podcast and collaborate on content with people that matter most in your industry. Learn more at salesculture.work.